Newsmakers is a production of Wisconsin Eye. To keep programs like this free and accessible to all, please consider a charitable gift to wisi.org/donate or text WISI to 44321. This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
Hello, and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. The legislature has been trying without success since at least 2019 to pass legislation related to regulating PFAS, harmful forever chemicals that can end up in drinking water. This session, there's one bill that has some momentum with set-aside funding in the biennial budget. And here to talk about that bill and the issue are Republican Senator Eric Wimberger, the author of the bill, and Democrat Senator Royce, member of the Joint Finance Committee. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thanks for having
us. Good to be with you.
Let's talk about the serious of this issue. How would you describe the seriousness of PFAS contamination in Wisconsin and the need to get something done this legislative session?
Well, the seriousness, I think, is still yet to be understood, I suppose. But it's a forever chemical anywhere. So forever chemical meaning it doesn't attach itself to another atom or decompose, which originally was thought when they were making it that means it's non-carcinogenic. However, the presence of it in your body makes your body react to the presence and causes problems, health problems. And people are starting to understand a little bit more and more every day about which chains do that and under what circumstances. But you know, there's things on the farm, there's spreading on the farm fields, there's stuff in the ground around facilities. So I think we're at the tip of the iceberg figuring out where it is.
I know there's PFAS been located in your district. How would you describe the seriousness of the contamination in Wisconsin?
Well, I think it's a very serious issue. Any time that Wisconsinites can't be assured that the water they rely on to drink or recreate in is clean. We know that PFAS cause harm to human health, and yes, it's been found in my district, but this is a product that was ubiquitous. It's in all kinds of things that we use every day, not just firefighting foam, but you know, non-stick coating on water-repellent clothing and pans. So it's a problem that touches every part of the state, even if we haven't yet tested in certain parts of the state.
Do you think it's important to get something done this legislative session? It's been, what we said, since 2019, the CLEAR Act, I think Democrats tried to pass. There's been some things Republicans have tried to do. It just hasn't gotten across
sure.
the finish line.
I think this session is going to be, the timing has to be right for this session for one particular reason. Now, that the spills law always allowed the DNR to react as necessary if they wanted to promulgate a rule. We are also bound by Chapter 160 to adopt any federal guidelines or standards. The EPA has started that rulemaking process, so I would anticipate a rule coming out sometime fall or winter, and at that point in time, we're going to be required to adopt that standard, whatever part per trillion they come up with. So we have to be prepared with legislation and with the money to then deal with that standard and helping people get
standard
to a particular
for
standard.
Drinking water?
For groundwater, surface water discharge, all that. Groundwater is the one coming up.
Do you think there's some urgency? Do you think now is the time to do something?
Well, I think several years ago was the time, but unfortunately we have run into some roadblocks. I think it's encouraging to see some bipartisan understanding that this is a problem. But we shouldn't be waiting for the EPA. We know that it takes years and years to get things done in the federal government, and Wisconsinites shouldn't have to wait for what the EPA does. And we should also be free to set higher standards for our own drinking water. We know that it takes a massive effort to remediate PFAS, whether it's in drinking water or surface water or soils. And it's a years-long process. So the longer we wait, the more harm there's going to be to human health.
You have been working on this issue since you were elected to the Senate in the fall of 2020. Now you have Senate Bill 312 that you've co-authored with Senators Coles and Representative Mercer in the Assembly. Continues to move along. You had a hearing. Last week you introduced a sub-amendment. We're going to put a little bit of a summary of this very comprehensive bill on the screen, but can you give us a summary of what you think the key components are?
Sure. Senator Coles had been drafting or talking about this issue before I got into the legislature. So we've kind of joined forces on this. There are some things that were of a particular interest to me. Rob Coles is experienced in this sort of thing, and he knows the ins and outs of how to create a grant program better than I would.
And there's several grant programs in the bill.
That practical aspect was very helpful, and we're both coming out with this. Now, the well remediation is one. If PFAS gets into your ground, it's going to settle out in the water table at a particular level based on whatever the soil content is in a particular location. So if your well is there, you perhaps could dig a deeper well and case that well, and then you get a water source. So people need help with that sort of thing.
Financial help,
right, mm-hmm. So a grant for that. Helping municipalities, for instance, be able to test their biosolids, test their effluent, see where they're at. As obviously, the wells that municipalities might draw the city water from, too. Just general testing costs, helping people with those things. And also an innocent landowner type of assistance where, if you weren't the person who put the PFAS in the ground, or we're listening to the DNR about what the standards are, then to hold you kind of harmless as long as you're trying to help out.
Those are key components that are important to you. It also has some changes to the authority and requirements for DNR. There's some studies. There's some provisions related to firefighting foam. I was looking at the lobbying website today. There are dozens of parties that are registered on this bill. Most of them have a neutral or a non-position. Mm-hmm. There's no one opposed. Do you support this bill, Senator Royce?
Not as written. And I think that the reason you see a lot of neutrality is because we know that the bill kind of was not quite ready for prime time when it was introduced, and it's been subbed out with a comprehensive amendment. But I think there are two very clear problems with the bill. A municipal grant program is great. We want to enable people to clean up. But this bill is not structured to allow DNR to just appropriate the money based on need, the way that Governor Evers' proposal was in the state budget. It is forcing people who need this money to come to the legislature and beg one at a time. And any time that you have the Joint Finance Committee holding the purse strings and holding that money hostage, we have seen time and time again that they don't appropriate the money. Or they say, well, you've said you need $20 million, we'll give you five. And that's just not getting it done.
There is more money allocated than what Governor Evers had requested in his budget.
That's true. There's a little bit more. But if the money doesn't spend, it's not really worth anything, right? It's just monopoly money. It's numbers on a page, not remediation actually getting done. And there's one other issue that we can maybe touch on, which is limitation of liability for
polluters.
We are
going to be talking about that. You introduced your sub-amendment last week. I know a lot of the environmental advocates that I had been talking about were waiting to see that sub-amendment to see if some of their concerns were addressed. And some of them, as Senator Royce mentioned, were with regard to the weakened DNR authority, what's perceived as changes to their authority. Did you talk to environmental advocates about that? Are there any changes in the sub-amendment related to that issue?
Well, isn't the phrase something that goes, if everyone has a problem with it or is neutral, then it's a good bill, I suppose. So I think that there are pros and cons for everybody, and it's directed at practical solutions kind of in a way that doesn't take anybody's particular interest. There's a balancing being done with how to require testing and also protect property rights. And that's a concern for me. The grants themselves are directing the DNR to establish a grant. Then the DNR, once they've established these rules, will come to the Finance Committee, and then a particular dollar amount will be put into that grant program. Now, this is all hinging on the fact that it goes through the budget, and as of this recording, I guess, the budget isn't passed. So we'll see how much actually gets into that bucket. As far as the DNR and its enforcement authorities go, it's pretty clear. It says that the DNR shall enforce any applicable laws or rules. And I would question what the issue is, simply because if not laws and rules, what exactly is to be enforced?
So there were no changes necessarily made through the subamendment on that part of the bill.
No, I had a hard time digesting what they actually wanted to enforce, if not laws and rules, what was being attempted to be enforced.
Are there examples of other things that the subamendment changed that address concerns in the that you heard in the hearing?
Sure, there's an annexation section that I really wanted to do, but it was getting complicated. In Marinette, in particular, in the town of Peshtigo, since the town of Peshtigo is close to the city of Marinette, one of the solutions for the town of Peshtigo is to have water piped in from the city of Marinette. Now, once you start doing that, there's a question of whether the city of Marinette might annex the town. And a lot of people in the town don't want to be annexed. And so it's, I was trying to, I don't know, be creative in, on how we might tool with the annexation process in these types of circumstances. But for the time being, it's a little too complicated, and we took it out for now.
Sure. Moving on to more discussion on that DNR authority mm-hmm. piece that you both have brought up. There are some significant new limitations, and DNR did testify at the June 5th hearing in the Senate committee, and they said the DNR is currently aware of over 100 sites where PFAS contamination has been found in Wisconsin. There will be certainly more sites identified in the future. Mm-hmm. Remedial actions can be costly and time-consuming, requiring DNR to begin response and remedial actions at these sites shifts a significant burden onto state taxpayers. Beginning a response action at every site that meets the criteria in the bill would require significant funding and DNR staff to implement. Is that a concern that you share, that there would be a shift to taxpayers as a result of this bill?
Certainly. I think it's of grave concern any time that you're allowing polluters to profit from their pollution, but you're not holding them accountable for cleaning up the mess that they create. And that's unfortunately one of the ways that this bill will operate if it becomes law. It also ties DNR's hands in terms of the times and places that it can test and take enforcement action. I think when we're facing a public health crisis as significant as this, we don't want to take away DNR's authority. We want to have environmental law and law and order, just like we want to have safe neighborhoods. We want to have safe drinking water that comes from our environmental law enforcement agency. And we also don't want to take DNR staff away from their very important duties to have them administer this grant program that may or may not actually give out any money at the end of the day, because right now there are no additional staff resources or money allocated to actually administer the program.
How do you respond to that criticism with regard to the shifting of costs to taxpayers for the remedial cleanup?
The administration of it will be that just like when the DNR establishes its guidelines for each particular grant, then the money will be allocated and consideration as to hiring authority or positions will be determined at that point in time. But we have to be careful about the term of polluter or emitter, because there's two cases out there, State versus Mothi and State versus Chrysler Outboard, that say that once one molecule passes from your property to another property, then you're subject to the law, and you'll get a $5,000 per day fine if you don't remediate as ordered. So what you have in the context of PFAS is you will have a municipality will take an effluent or a leachate from a landfill, for instance. It will contain a lot of PFAS. They'll put it into their biosolids, and then they will give the biosolids to a farmer. That farmer had a declaration from the city that the thing was safe and that it contained or was within compliance with the law. Now, we're hoping to change that over the course of time, but at least that's historically how it ends up on the farm fields. So it sinks into the ground. That farmer basically has it well spoiled. They're going to try and water their cattle. Anytime they bring it up from the well and try to water their crops, that's a discharge of a hazardous substance. So are we really going to hold the farmer responsible for that? And it gets worse, especially in places like the town of Peshtigo. So it sinks into the ground, and it gets caught up in the aquifer and the water table, and it shifts to your neighbor. Your neighbor now has it in their ground, and that farmer is an emitter. But then it shifts even further through that neighbor's yard and into the next guy down. And that neighbor, who had nothing to do with anything, is also now an emitter by rule. subject to these penalties.
So you think that it's fair for taxpayers to step in and pay for the cleanup in those situations?
I
are there other situations?
Yeah, I think so. Everybody's listening to the DNR now. That's the issue is everybody this whole time has been listening to the DNR. Now, as far as common law nuisance rules, you're seeing all sorts of settlements. 3M just had a settlement yesterday.
A huge settlement.
You know, Johnson Controls settled in a class action. These are all being handled in the Northern District of South Carolina. And so there's going to be this common law nuisance dynamic, and there's nothing wrong with that. I think people are going to get their comeuppance in that way. But there's a complicated legal problem that when it goes down into the wastewater treatment facility in the municipality, and the municipality then gives it to somebody, that action is called an intervening act, meaning that it's likely going to cut the tie of liability between the farmer way on the other side of the state and the manufacturer or the original source.
Making the state responsible.
Making the farmer essentially responsible, because there's a sovereign immunity clause in Section 292 that will hold the cities harmless.
I think, did you want to respond to that in terms of the DNR's responsibility under the bill for remedial action for some cleanup costs?
Well, there certainly is a role for public funding to ensure that we can clean up PFAS, but I think it's really problematic to tie the DNR's hands. They have enforcement discretion, and they exercise it. And so when the DNR is going after polluters, they are going after the people that actually caused the problem, not the farmers who, you know, might be downstream or the neighboring properties. Everybody has an interest in making sure that it is cleaned up. The last thing we want to do is pass a law that's going to make things worse in the future by essentially shifting polluter responsibility onto taxpayers. And that's ultimately what this bill does. This is not, you know, $125 million is not going to solve this problem. We have to have polluter responsibility, and we cannot afford to weaken that as we're facing this massive cleanup.
So there is this $125 million set aside. It is more than what the governor had proposed. We talked about that. Is it enough? Do you feel like that's the right amount?
That's likely just the first investment. There's no way that it's final. Wausau was just trying to upgrade their treatment plant, and I want to say it was $20 million to upgrade. And that's just one kind of mid-sized city, really. And you're going to find this in all sorts of places for all sorts of reasons, and the remediation is going to be different, I think. So, there's going to definitely be more to come, I'm sure.
Do you have a sense for how you would like that funding to be allocated amongst the municipal grants, the innocent landowner grants, some of the money that DNR might need for remediation? What percentages do you see?
Well, I don't know about percentages, but I think the people who don't have a water source or an ability to have a water source nearby need to have priority. So if there's a way to pipe in water from a nearby city that's relatively close, maybe that's a better option, and then help people who are way far away and miles away from a source like that to get them up to speed first. But I think it's going to be a multifaceted type of an approach.
You touched on this a little bit earlier, but I wanted to ask you more directly. There is no dedicated funding in the bill for DNR staffing or implementation by the agency. Do you think they'll be able to do all of the work in the bill without additional funding or staffing?
Yes, they just come to the Finance Committee and do a supplemental request.
So that would happen likely in short order, you think, and be approved?
I would imagine. Within months.
Well, That's a pretty big leap. I mean, if you've paid attention at all to the Joint Finance Committee, you know that it is not an easy process, and, you know, your request is just as likely to die as to be even given a hearing.
You know, some of the criticism around this issue has been with the spills law. 1978 law, been in place for that amount of time, passed to require certain actions when a hazardous substance has been released into the environment. You mentioned some lawsuits that currently are ongoing in Wisconsin, with Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce questioning that authority under the spills law. Do you think that DNR has overstepped in some cases in their implementation of the spills law?
I wouldn't say overstepped. It's just confused. The reason the DNR lost in Waukesha was because not that there was a violation of the hazardous the spills law. That was found to be true. Okay, so the DNR can do these things without any further rules necessarily to say, hey, I declare that you have spilled a hazardous substance. Okay, then what? It's when they order someone to remediation. So they're going to order you to fix the problem. Well, fix the problem to what level? And unless there is a level that is in compliance, so to speak, then the court has said that, well, you can't order someone to remediate to a level if there's no level that's been determined. And that's the consternation I've had over the last several years, is that the DNR can create independent rules about what should happen with PFAS. It just has to be scientifically based and logical, and it has to pass what's called a rational basis test. Now, if they do that, they could make these rules, but they don't. As a result, to hold someone to a standard that doesn't exist makes the concept arbitrary and capricious, and they'll win in court every time.
I think that critics have said that requiring the DNR to create those more stringent numeric standards will decrease the flexibility in the law and make it harder for them to hold polluters accountable.
I disagree with that, because the whole purpose of administrative law is to account for scientific evolution here. If we were to go into the legislature and do things like set a standard like was requested several years back of 70 parts per trillion, now the new standards come in and it's much less than that, what's your best chance of having a change to that? Through the legislature with the politics, or to allow the DNR to promulgate a rule updating the latest scientific standard? We have administrative rules processes specifically for dynamics like this.
Shouldn't the DNR be promulgating rules on these issues to make it more clear on to polluters or to landowners what is happening?
Well, I think the DNR is responding appropriately and using their discretion on a case-by-case basis to say what is appropriate remediation here. If you have a pollution plume that is in surface water, in groundwater, and in the soil, it is going to require different things for each one. If it's a simple case, maybe just capping the well is, you know, all the remediation that's needed. So the idea that, you know, you should just set a numerical standard and that's the be-all, end-all is, I think, just not responsive to the reality on the ground and not scientific. And I'll point out that Senator Wimberger, I think, just gave the strongest argument against his own bill, which is that you really can't rely on the legislature to respond to these issues again and again. And it's hard to pass laws, and it's hard to go through a process where you have to go beg politicians for every dime. And that's why we should vest the municipal grant program with the DNR, with the experts who know how to give out grants, rather than making them come and hold their cup at the Joint Finance Committee.
Wisconsin currently doesn't have a groundwater standard. Is there... Would the restrictions in the bill prevent the DNR from taking action against and clean up around related to groundwater contamination?
There has been nothing stopping the DNR from creating or promulgating a standard since they discovered this. And all they have to do is go to the University of Wisconsin, do some studies, cite to other studies, and then start the promulgation process.
How long will that take?
I guess it depends on when they organize it, but it certainly wouldn't have taken 5 years from the time that when they thought of doing this. What they've instead done is they've not done an emergency rule, first of all, and then not commence any rulemaking authority outside trying to enforce EPA standards. The consternation a year and a half back was that the EPA had come out with guidelines of 70 parts per trillion, and the question was whether or not a guideline was subject to Chapter 160 and required Wisconsin to adopt it. So far, the DNR has just done things like say, well, Minnesota does it this way, Michigan does it this way, and they just pick a standard, and that's called arbitrary and capricious. They have to have some sort of a connection to a scientific study and then just promulgate the standard. They could adopt the federal standard, they could when it comes, or they could have created their own separately by now.
Well, let's not throw away the history here. Unfortunately, what we have had are Republicans putting forth legislation, taking bipartisan victory laps, posing for holy pictures and passing laws to address PFAS several sessions ago than when the DNR attempts to implement the law by promulgating rules so that it can be enforced. Republicans on the Joint Committee for Administrative Review basically backdoor kills the rules at the behest of WMC. So I don't think it's fair to say, well, the DNR should promulgate standards when the DNR has tried to do that following the law that was passed that Republicans were pushing, and, you know, a pretty weak law by all comparisons. And, you know, it was Republicans who basically stopped them from doing that. You know, we had Republicans overstaying their appointments on the DNR board so that they could block the DNR from taking action. So I think it's not truly accurate to say that the DNR, you know, should have just done this.
You talked about the need for more study on this issue, more information. Your bill does include several studies, including two that talk about the need for analysis on the migration of PFAS into the Bay of Green Bay and into the Wisconsin and Mississippi rivers. What are you concerned that we might find there?
Well, the facilities and airports that we are aware of are close to the Bay of Green Bay and close to the Wisconsin and Mississippi rivers. So, you know, I think that's just a practical thing to think about. There are advisories to eating fish, to drinking water for the PFAS. It's basically going from the pollution plume and migrating to the bay. What we've noticed a few different sources, not just airports and industry, but in particular known locations for biosolid spreading that have migrated to the bay even one time. If it's one time spreading at 100,000 parts per trillion, going into the Bay of Green Bay at 12 parts per trillion.
We've heard some disagreement here today, and as we round out the show, I'd like to get kind of a status update on the bill. Do you think you're going to get bipartisan support?
Ultimately, yes, I do think I'll get plenty of bipartisan support.
I don't think there's any Democrats registered as co-sponsors yet.
Oh, well, we'll figure that out. But by the time it'll get signed into law, so I guess that makes it bipartisan. I guess we have to iron out some of the details to make people happy, but I think the general concepts and the effort are noble, and people will recognize that.
Do you see your caucus getting behind some parts of this bill?
Well, I think that unfortunately we had a great bill, a great proposal that has been offered by Governor Evers and legislative Democrats that would have had all of the benefits of this bill without any of the problems. And so that would have been a very clear and direct way to get money more quickly into the hands of municipalities so that they could clean up the pollution. I don't think that Democrats and the governor are going to be very eager to sign on to legislation that is going to, in the long run, do more harm by shifting liability from polluters to taxpayers, and that's going to handcuff our DNR's ability to address crimes of pollution.
Do you think the governor will sign this bill?
Yeah, ultimately, in the ultimate form, I'm sure he will, because holding polluters accountable for law violations is something Josh Call can do right now.
And your next steps for the bill, in addition to the sub-amendment, do you expect additional changes?
Right. There's some tinkering that's going to have to happen. Everybody has a word that thinks it's meaning something that it doesn't, or, there's a laundry list of that sort of stuff.
Let's say this bill passes in some form. What are the next steps, you think? What needs to happen next on PFAS in Wisconsin?
Well, certainly the DNR needs funding. They need positions and funding to be able to administer a grant program successfully. And then the legislature, the Republicans on the Joint Finance Committee that gutted Governor Evers' proposal and instead have decided to go for this, they have to actually put their money where their mouth is and start funding these requests as they come through. And we'll see if that happens.
If this bill passes, what do you want to work on next with PFAS?
With PFAS? Well, I guess after we get some testing in, see where things are happening. There's one project that's interesting to me that's part of the bill is coordinating with UW and the estuary. There's a designation in Green Bay as the largest freshwater estuary. We used to call it a swamp, but they call it an estuary now.
Fancy word.
But because there's stuff going into the estuary, and the UW has already done some initial studies now on the PFAS migration into the bay, that perhaps there can be some coordination with that federal designation and the NERF Center, National Estuary Center, that's going to be developed there with the scientists and researchers that that would come.
Well, certainly an issue important to both of your constituencies. So thank you both for joining us and providing an update on the topic today.
Sure, thanks.
Thank you, Lisa.
And thank you to the viewers of Newsmakers. Be sure to tune in again as we highlight the issues and sit down with the decision makers who make a difference for all of us.
This program is a production of Wisconsin Eye, an independent, nonpartisan, nonprofit media network with a mission to inform, educate, and engage the citizens of Wisconsin. Wisconsin Eye is the nation's first and only independently funded state civics broadcast network, providing gavel-to-gavel access to government proceedings and events at the state capitol.